Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Marmer, today joined by Dr. John Endres. And let's get into our first news story of today. And we're going to be talking about the tariffs that are now threatened to be imposed on South Africa. Now, Donald Trump, when he announced his Liberation Day tariffs and what America would be renegotiating all of its trade relations around the world, did impose quite heavy tariffs on South Africa, as well as a number of other countries, although we got one of the higher tariff rates. But that was postponed to meet a deadline of the 9th of July. Well, the 9th of July is today, but yesterday, President Donald Trump said that some countries would have their tariffs rates set to certain percentages. He singled out certain countries: Japan, South Korea, Kazakhstan, Serbia, but South Africa was also on the list, being hit with a threat of 30% tariff on all of our exports to the US. However, this is set to take place now on the 1st of August, not necessarily today. So we do have a little bit of a stay of execution, but we've now seen the response from our government, President Ramaphosa, in a statement that I'm sure, John, you have many things to say about, that Donald Trump's unilateral imposition of a 30% trade tariff against South Africa was a bad thing, that it's based on a contested interpretation of SA duties on US goods, that they welcomed the fact that the US would, quote, perhaps consider reducing the tariff if South Africa reduced its tariff and non-tariff barriers to US imports. And basically, Ramaphosa then also said that exporters in South Africa must look to diversify who they are exporting to, which is not exactly a sign of confidence that you expect the tariffs to be removed. So, quite a few angles to this, but John, what's your takeaway on this one?
So I think my first take is that this is very tough for South Africa's exporters, especially the ones with exposure to the United States, because it's so hard to make a call on where things stand and where they're going, because it seems to change by the day. And I don't think that that is necessarily a sign of pure willfulness and erraticism by the Trump administration. I think for the Trump administration, the tariffs are very much a bludgeoning tool to negotiate with countries and up the ante, put them on their back foot, and assert American dominance in the relationship. That's what their purpose is. And that also means that the details from the American perspective don't matter that much. Whether it's 30% or 50 or 10, kicking in to today at midnight or paused for a month, all of that is part of the game of just keeping the pressure on in order to strengthen the US negotiating position. And because the US is such a big economy with so much consumer demand, it is in a position to play this hand quite powerfully. I think in South Africa's case, we have really not done ourselves any favors in the sense that the US administration has communicated some of its priorities to us. It has told us what are the things that it cares about, like, for example, race-based laws, property rights, high crime rate, and our foreign policy stance. And on none of these issues has the South African government shown any signs of even acknowledging the issues, I would say, much less showing any movement or any inclination to compromise, negotiate, or offer, any kind of response to that. And I think as a result of this non-responsiveness on the part of the South African government, the US is pretty much running out of patience and sort of quite happy to let us stew for a while. Why should they invest effort into making us, any attractive deals? Because we're not making ourselves attractive to the United States. We had our Deputy Minister of Foreign Relations signing the condolence book at the Iranian embassy and making a big song and dance of that on the social media accounts of the Department of International Relations. And that's really poking a stick in the eye of the United States. So I think, I'm not surprised that we've not received any favorable treatment. I expect us not to receive any favorable treatment going forward. And I think that our president's response to the tariffs was distinctly unimpressive. It was a letter that effectively said to the United States, "You guys don't know what's going on. Let us explain to you. Let's talk, et cetera, et cetera." It looked very
What
weak.
What's interesting about that is that this has been the approach the entire time, right? You know, your data is wrong. No, we need to explain it to you. No, you don't understand what's going on. And it hasn't worked at all. Not one tiny drop. And yet sort of government just seems to be bludgeoning along ahead with this approach because it clearly has no other ideas.
Yeah. And I think it has not recognized the changed circumstances in which it finds itself in its relationship to the United States. You know, by now it's been how many, 5 months or thereabouts since President Trump took office. We've seen his style. We know that he's abrasive, brash, aggressive, confrontational, direct, outrageous. And so I think that he simply isn't impressed, you know, when the response he gets is the kind of response that he got from President Ramaphosa here, on a question of style, that is, but also on a question of substance. So, you know, even on substance, we're not showing ourselves to be, you know, serious or assertive or determined or ambitious, you know, like what do we want? We're sort of happy to, I don't know, ask for favors, happy to think about small concessions that we can make. Like, that's not where the game is at the moment. You know, if South Africa wants to progress, it has to be far more decisive, far more assertive, and far more interesting and innovative in the things that it offers this important trading partner.
I do push back a little bit on your characterization of this being a very willful, you know, this being quite a deliberate strategy by the US to bash things. I think they have overstretched themselves a little bit. I think they're trying to sign a lot of trade deals right now. And that actually provides an opportunity for South Africa. If we changed our rhetoric to be more pleasant, more flattering, and less, I don't know, explainy, we could probably get away with some sort of trade agreement with the US that was far less strenuous or harsh on South Africa than we might otherwise. Just I think because the US wants to get as many deals done as possible, but you know, so far the government's approach has just been this kind of, oh, we'll send them. I mean, you know, as you say, it's these kind of sort of minor concessions and tinker around the edges, and we'll talk softly and carry no stick. It's not really impressive.
I don't think we can fix this through a change of tone at all. You know, so I think the Americans are looking for some responsiveness and some interaction with the things they've pointed out that they want to see. And I think as long as they're not seeing that sort of movement, you know, our special envoy to Washington, BC Jonas, is going to keep cooling his heels. I don't think he's going to get access. Nobody wants to see him in Washington. They're not interested. And as you pointed out in our discussion before the show, there's a lot of countries in the world, and there's many countries that are more important than South Africa. And Washington is going to focus on those countries first. And if we, you know, sort of hang around here at the southern tip of Africa, making mewling noises, who cares? Nobody cares about that.
Yeah, we make ourselves very easy to ignore. Yeah, that's the central problem. Yeah. Okay, we're now going to move on to our next story. Kind of joined to this one, quite briefly, is that Ramaphosa has put a lot of stock in the G20 meeting, which will be held in Cape Town this year. It's been talked about as, you know, this great opportunity for South Africa to put itself forward on the world stage, to bring investment, to show that we're some sort of global leader. But the US, as part of its irritation with South Africa, has other ideas. It seems to be showing that it's really not so keen on being seriously involved in the G20. So the US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has announced that he will be skipping the G20 financial officials meeting in South Africa next week. This is the second G20-related meeting he's going to be skipping. Instead, the US is going to be sending the acting Undersecretary for International Affairs, Michael Kaplan, which is, shall we say, quite a bit lower in terms of the profile of the official they're sending. And John, I think this just speaks exactly to what we were talking about here, which is that, you know, the US is not going to give us the prestige of showing up to our grand shindig in Cape Town.
Mm. I think this also reflects the US administration's preference for bilateral relations rather than multilaterals. And I can well imagine that, you know, sitting around the office table Mr. Besant with his colleagues that said, look, we're all very busy people. Like, where should we invest our time? And should we go to this G20 thing and we'll sit around with other ministers and talk about solidarity and equity and sustainability? Or should we go and see the Japanese? Like, we've just slapped some tariffs on them. Even though they're our allies, we can't like them. So let's go and talk to them. It'll probably be a much better use of our time. And I think that's how it works. You know, the Americans currently, I think, are not terribly hung up on pretense or the pretense of respectability. They're much more focused on effectiveness, getting stuff done, bilateral relationships rather than multilateral relationships. And South Africa is not playing an important role in that context. So, yeah, I think it's not entirely unexpected. President Ramaphosa did say after that May Oval Office meeting that President Trump was going to come to the November big summit, G20 summit. I'm not so sure. I think, you know, that he might find that he's got more important things to do.
Yes, our only source on that so far, I think, is President Ramaphosa. So yes, we shall have to see.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the sort of background consequences of all of this kind of mealy-mouth stuff and economic weakness. And that is that analysis has come out from Investec Wealth and Investment International, which has found that South Africa's economic growth has left its population significantly poorer than the global average. That South Africa's quite closely tracked the global average of wealth up to about 2010, and then we decoupled from them, began to sort of flatline and actually pull away. So in 2023, in purchasing power parity terms, South Africa's GDP per capita was $15,194 compared to $22,850 globally. That's the sort of global average. This is because we've had such incredibly weak economic growth for the last decade, at least, even longer. Definitely during the period of President Ramaphosa, definitely during COVID, when our decrease was deeper than many countries and our bounce back was weaker than many countries. And in order for us to catch up to the global average, South Africa would have to grow at around 8% economically for the next 10 years, which is a very high number that only the best economies in the world achieve. And I think this really kind of lays bare how disastrous the economic policy of the last, well, since 2008, basically, has been. What's your take on this?
Yeah, very much in keeping with the earlier part of our discussion. You know, if you're thinking seriously and with numbers about the state of the country and the state of the world, that's the kind of results that you find. You know, we've also been looking at those numbers. I know we did the GDP per capita in real terms, not on a purchasing power parity basis, but sort of in just a straight comparison. And in those terms, South Africa was at parity with the rest of the world in 1994 at the dawn of democracy. So real GDP per capita in dollars in South Africa was 1-to-1, the same as in the rest of the world. In 2008, 2009, it was still 1-to-1 effectively. By now, I think we're down to 66% of the world average. So it's very clearly visible in the data. And to turn this around, as that report finds, takes nothing but economic growth. Like, that's the way to do it. At the IRR, with our Blueprint for Growth papers, our What SA Can Be program, we have been trying to think of how to get South Africa to grow at 7% per annum, which is very ambitious and certainly not immediately achievable, but we think achievable in steps. But you've got to take those steps. You know, you've got to get to your 3% growth, then get to your 5% for a few years, then level it up to 7%. And then we could get back to the average in the world, never mind thinking about overtaking the average, which is what we should be doing. Now, why should South Africans not be better off than the average person in the world? That's a good goal for us to have. But it's not one that we're pursuing at the moment, not one that we're taking seriously. And yes, I think we're seeing the communication out of the ANC specifically. You know, we've got a government of national unity, but I do want to take specific aim at the ANC as the largest partner, as the leader in that coalition, for not having a concept or a vision of the state that we find ourselves in, or how to get out of it.
That's exactly right. The loss of potential and the fact that we've gotten poorer is the real mark against government. If we had simply made no progress since 2007, that's one thing. But to go backwards compared to the world, that's another thing entirely. Okay, let us go on to the story that's been bubbling away in the news. We talked about it, Herman and I, earlier this week. But John, I just wanted your thoughts on it. And this is the allegations by the Lieutenant General and the KZN cops, Nkwanazi, who has accused Senzo Machuno, the police minister, of interfering with the investigation of political killings by shutting down the political killings unit at KZN, and also having illicit contacts with a businessman who's currently in prison and on trial for some things, called Vusimuzi Matala, goes by the nickname of Cat, which is a great nickname for a dodgy character. The minister has pushed back, saying that he has never met Mr. Matala, has never spoken to him, nor has the minister ever requested or received anything of him from him, denying there's a corrupt relationship there. The minister was also accused of communicating with a guy called Brian Mokhotsi, who Machuna's officers said, the minister knows and has met Mr. Brian Mokhotsi. He is just a comrade, not an associate of the minister. Now, that being said, while I don't think the Minister of Police is necessarily covering himself in glory here, there's something off about these accusations. My sort of understanding, and I speak open to evidence to the contrary, is that the accuser of the minister in this case, Nkwanazi, is someone who we might say is sort of in the Zuma expanded universe. He's kind of in that political faction of the ANC. And like Herman said on Monday, this does have the feeling a little bit of a political hit, even if what's being said is true. Is all of it true? I don't know. But whatever, this is a huge crisis that strikes straight to the heart of the police. What's your take on this, John?
Yeah, I think the story we're seeing developing in the media and social media is that this is a good cop versus bad cop story. And that is very appealing. You know, that's what we'd like to think. You know, there's the forces of good battling with the forces of evil and hopefully prevailing in the end. And for us as South Africans, that has the ring of something that's too good to be true. Now, we've been exposed to bad cops for such a long time. I think that it's quite hard to find a good cop and one who is willing to put his life on the line to remain a good cop. And maybe this is one of those cases. But I think that is the reason for our unease, which Herman and you expressed on Monday, which I can also echo now. We certainly don't have all the facts, so that's certainly true. But we also have our own background knowledge of the way South Africa works. Now, if we think back to Jackie Salebi saying that, you know, Finish and Clar, he's my friend Finish and Clar, about Glenn Agliotti, was one example of sort of the cops colluding with the criminals, with a distinct lack of self-awareness about what they were doing. And everything that's happened since then, you know, so many of our police commissioners have had to resign or have faced accusations or charges of corruption and illicit dealings. So we are, I think, rightly cynical in South Africa. And we think that this good cop versus bad cop story is maybe too good to be true and we shouldn't believe it. But at this stage, yeah, we're still watching to see what facts will emerge.
You know, but of course, there's a role here for President Ramaphosa to play, right? He could step in, he could say, look, we're suspending the police minister for now while we investigate these allegations. We want to clear his name or we want to find out if this is true, whatever. He could take some sort of decisive action. Instead, it's exactly what we've seen in the previous sort of two stories. The response is the concern, but then nothing changes. And that's, I think, exactly, you know, just the hallmark of the Ramaphosa years has been this sort of, for the most part, stasis. And when decisions are made, they're bad decisions, like passing national health insurance or passing the expropriation bill, which, you know, only makes the problem worse.
I wonder if there's one conclusion that we can draw, and I'm not sure about this, but It does seem to be a big story. It also seems to be a big story that's not going to go away soon. It doesn't smell like a story where tomorrow all the relevant facts emerge, the right decisions get taken, the bad people get locked up, the good people get rewarded. That's probably not going to happen. So what's probably going to happen is, like, this is going to keep rolling on as a sort of political scandal. Does it help or hurt the ANC? No. Is there any way in which it could help the ANC? And I'm not really seeing that. I think I'm seeing maybe factions. Yeah, it'll become the instrument of factions within the ANC, and factions outside the ANC. I guess we could call MK a faction out of the ANC, outside the ANC.
The ANC's expanded universe, right, which includes the EFF and MK.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. This is politically speaking a terrible story for the ANC, and you know, I think that partly explains the weak response to it so far, which is that they really don't know what to do, because this is not great for the coherence of their party. I mean, the accusation here is essentially that the Minister of Police is turning a blind eye to the murder of ANC cadres specifically. Mm.
Yes. And now also think about the sort of the latest stance that the DA has taken, calling on the president to fire cabinet ministers accused of corruption in response to his firing of a DA minister, deputy minister, DA, Andrew Whitfield. So it sort of ties into that corruption narrative, which is not one that's favorable for the ANC. And presumably a decisive president would recognize the threat that this poses and do something about it. But I don't think that he is going to do something about it. I think it is just going to simmer along.
Hey, but at least we've got the national dialogue to look forward to.
So. Yes, maybe that is the solution.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. We hope you found the show interesting. And we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.